Teach us now, loving God, the measure of our days. Teach us now, forgiving Christ, the release of our sin. Teach us now, empowering Spirit, the freedom to do the things, the good that you've called us to do, as we hear your word to us through Jesus the Christ. Amen. We have been looking at the John Gospel texts that follow the resurrection of Jesus. For John has a number of lingering human attributes that continue to haunt even the disciples and apostles after Jesus has been raised from the dead. It is a form of good news for us because we can see our own vulnerable humanity in their mistakes as they live out the post-resurrection life of Jesus. We can say, there we go as well. Today we look at the relationship that Peter has with the disciple whom Jesus loved, and that continuing competitiveness and rivalry that existed between the two of them. Sibling rivalry is something that children identify and practice at a young age. Hearing some prayers from young children, little Joyce said, "Dear God, thank you for the baby brother that you've sent me, but what I asked for was a puppy. I never asked for anything before. You can look that up." Little Larry said, "Dear God, maybe Cain and Abel would not kill each other so much if they had their own rooms. It works better for us. It works okay with my brother and I that we do." Children, as you know, imitate parents in the development of practices and patterns of life, for better or for worse. A mom was going to a local preschool where she wanted to pick up her four-year-old son. She decided to ask the teacher that day about how he was doing in the classroom. Smiling, the teacher commented on how bright and attentive the boy was, and that they were very delighted to have him in the classroom. He was the source of energy for the entire group of children. She decided to stay and watch her son and his behavior in the class for a little while. She watched as Tony, with the boys and the girls, played in a miniature kitchen. And suddenly, Tony stepped up to the toy refrigerator and flung open the door and exclaimed at the top of his lungs, "Hey, anybody want a beer?" Children will imitate us. They will imitate our patterns, our loyalties, our envies. A single parent of a teenage son who was in financial difficulty and lived in overt poverty was in an old mobile with all sorts of problems. Her son's friend, who lived in a beautiful home not too far away, ran away from home for a few days, and she could not understand it. Why did he do that? He's got everything he could possibly want. So she went to her son and said, "Well, why is it that Jimmy went away?" And the son said thoughtfully, "Well, Mom, it's like this. Jimmy has a lot of environment, but not much love. I have a lot of love, but not much environment." It is easy to envy other people for the wrong things. Envy, covetousness, and jealousy are human patterns that we are tempted to get into when we believe that the other person has something that we need or want. There is something of who they are, of what they do, and what they desire to accomplish that may catch us in our own imagination and move us to envy. Envy is, at the same time, a rejection of my own giftedness. It is a belief that the other person has the best that God has to give, and somehow God left me out. It is a rejection of the fact that God has made every one of us different, with different possibilities, different gifts, different senses of destiny and different patterns of life. There are many kinds of envy that we enter into. There's envy around personal attributes of how we look. I have a brother who was a state champion gymnast in high school, and needless to say, I do not look like him. There were moments I envied him because not only was he a great physical being, he is also good-looking, tended to attract all of the women, and was also the most brilliant in the family as a physicist. I often asked God, why is it that he got all the good stuff in the family? But over the years, I've come to realize that there are many other good attributes for myself and for the rest of us. Part of growing up is to realize that we no longer have to envy what the other person has because we're coming to grips with what God has given to us. Other things that we envy are status, success, the kinds of relationships and connections. This is a city of connections and who knows whom. We may envy that some have better connections than we do. We may envy the ancestry and heritage that some people come, even their inheritance. Oh, Lord, I wish I had that kind of money. We may envy the talent. When I played basketball, I envied people who could jump. There were some who could jump 4 feet directly up into the air. I envied those people. Hard work and motivation. Ambition is something we may envy with others, because we just don't have the energy and drive to do what they do. Peter and John, who is called the disciple whom Jesus loved, seem to have an ongoing competitive quality with each other. My sense is Peter was more in competition with John than John was with Peter. We see this played out even at the end of the gospel, where Jesus is said to Peter, "Follow me." And Peter right away, then following Jesus, turns around to look at John and say, "Well, what about him? What should he do?" You get the distinct viewpoint that Peter was preoccupied with John's qualities of life, that he wanted in many ways to be like John. Nowhere else in the gospel do we find that John is called Peter is called the disciple whom Jesus loved. In the text before this, we see that Jesus asked Peter, "Do you love me?" But not once do we hear the words that Jesus overtly loved Peter. Now, we know to the depths of our being, instinctually, that Jesus must have loved Peter. But the writer of the gospel repeats 5 times that this special disciple was the disciple that Jesus loved, and his name was John. Peter seemed to have a desire to be like John in some ways. John was probably Jesus' favorite. How do we handle that? Should Jesus have favorites? Should family members have favorites? Peter perceived that John was a favorite. It never says that for sure, but his perception was his reality. Peter was probably more like the alpha male. He would take charge. He would take initiative. He would move out and speak out as quickly as he thought or felt. He would talk. He would act. He would lead. A man's kind of man. John, however, was seen as the man who leaned up against Jesus. He was quieter. He was more reflective. He tended to spend a lot of time with Jesus very personally. There's not very much said about John's initiative. In fact, John is the one who hangs out with the women, even to the point of the cross, the only man probably have left of the disciples at the cross, when Jesus says to John, "Behold your mother," to his mother, and reconnects the son and the mother at that moment of time. John was the kind of man who would hang back. He would build close relationships. He would think, reflect, and he would write. He would not be the one who would lay down his life in an upside-down crucifixion like Peter. But he would be the one who would write and write and write some of the most magnificent theology in history. We often attribute the revelation as the most poignant and intense poetry regarding the gospel of Jesus Christ. Peter was evidently quite preoccupied with John's gifts. There are moments in my life that I have envied others. There was a time when I really was very interested in a young woman in the high school by the name of Maxine. Maxine and I were friends, but she did not like me as a boyfriend. That was a concern to me, particularly when I found out that Richard Vance was her romantic interest. I remember his whole name very well. For a couple of weeks, I thought of ways that I could undermine him or I could help him. Finally, in the battle over what I should do, I decided to help him and told him that it might be good if he would consider inviting Maxine to the senior prom. He did so, and they went together. I had to overcome my moment of envy because I would rather have been there with her myself. Envy is a temptation to control the other person's life. Lord, you've told me about me and how I'm going to die. And Peter turned in, and what about John? What kind of life or death is he going to have? And Jesus said, what's that to you, Peter? What difference does that make? Look out for where you're going and what you're about. Don't worry about John. The temptation of Peter to want to know more than he should, to want to be more than he was. We linger in envy when we turn away from our primary relationship with God, turn away from what God has gifted us to do and who has made us to be, and we turn toward another and say, what about him, Lord? What about her and her giftedness? Why haven't you given me that? We want to have what we don't have. It goes all the way back to the story of Cain and Abel, where Cain realizes that Abel has a blessing from God that Cain will never get. And rather than face himself and face his own limitations and his own possibilities, Cain kills his brother Abel. Sometimes in my past, I have envied other Presbyterian pastors. I admit that I have had points of envy for Earl Palmer, who's preached in this pulpit, because he's a wonderful teacher and has a tremendous ability to connect history with the biblical text. I've envied my mentor, Gary Demarest, who preached in this pulpit a while back for my installation, because of his tremendous scholarship and historical ability to interweave the gospel and to make theological points in clear ways. I had envied Tom Tool, who has preached in this pulpit, because Tom seems to have this wonderful attribute of appealing to almost everybody at every level and having a connection to them that brightens the spirits. I've envied Craig Barnes for his poetry and his literary ability and his ability to literally memorize verbatim sermons and repeat them exactly the same way at each service. I'll probably never be able to do that. If I do that, you'll know it's a miracle day. But what God says to me is, look out for yourself, Gareth. Pay attention to your own gifts. There are gifts that you have that you can place out there in front of people that are also important. Don't worry about the others. We linger in envy when we ask about others and we are interested in conversations about them. We focus on them and we almost play out the National Enquirer, which inquiring people want to know. We become a society preoccupied with the lives of other people and their beauty, their mistakes, their flaws, rather than paying attention to ourselves. That we have become a society of celebrity status through television. That's a form of envy. Believing that we can't possibly look as good or practice a kind of life that reaches that place of esteem. We linger in envy when we talk about others. You notice that one of the things that happens about John here is there's a rumor that spreads that John's going to live forever. John's going to live until Jesus comes back again. Now, who spread that rumor? The only person who knew that that conversation had taken place was probably Peter. Peter, the one who liked to talk before he thought, was probably the source of the rumor. Gospel doesn't say that, but you can read between the lines. And you can think that Peter may have been so preoccupied with John that he just couldn't be quiet about it. He had to keep talking about, well, John's not going to die. Jesus said he's going to live. We are tempted to spread rumors, to fixate, to obsess on other people, to treat them with celebrity status. At the same time, we denigrate ourselves as if we don't count. And what God is saying to us as clearly as God can in the gospel is, you count. They don't count any more than you do. The pastor doesn't count any more than you do. We each have different gifts and different calls and different abilities, and we each count before the presence of God. Jesus gives sharp critique to this. The last word toward Peter in the gospel is a word of criticism. That's how it ends. Peter doesn't look very good in the end. And the reason why is because Jesus does not want to leave Peter with the sense that he can keep practicing that kind of lifestyle and be a good leader of people toward the living God. Peter, look out for yourself. And so there's some patterns here that Jesus raises that are patterns that will redeem us in spite of our envy. One is, that's clear, focus on Jesus and look ahead. Don't turn around and look behind or to the side of who else is going and what their attributes are. Stay focused on God and look out for yourself. Take responsibility for your own life. Jesus loves you. Yes, Jesus may love the other and give some others better or different kinds of gifts from your opinion. But God has given you gifts. Look out for yourself. Listen and watch and reflect. Don't do all the talking. Don't be so brash and out in front of people before you know what you're doing. Take some time to step back and ask the questions and reflect, like John does. Lean in close to Jesus. I think one of the things that bugged Peter is that John would be able to lean in so close to Jesus and have Jesus' ear, to the point that even at the last spur when Jesus was saying he would be betrayed, Peter looks to John, the one that Jesus loved, said, John, why don't you ask Jesus who he's talking about? You're close to Jesus. Find out. Be yourself and use your giftedness. Each of us are different. Peter is not John. Peter becomes the spokesperson for the gospel on the day of Pentecost. John disappears into the quiet woodwork in history. John becomes the writer and theologian. Peter becomes the one who literally leads the church. Be yourself and use your gifts. Put your future in God's hands. Whatever the future is, some here may live the next 2 weeks and some here may live the next 50 years. Look out for your own life. God has measured your days and given you an opportunity to live. Do the best that God has given you to do. Don't try to live the other person's life. Discern the difference between admiration and envy. For as we grow and mature, we can admire how God has gifted other people differently than us. Envy still holds on to the hope that God will undermine that person and build me up in place of them. That's one of the reasons I believe that coveting is the 10th commandment. Don't covet. It will kill you in the long run. It will kill the people in your life in the long run. I never heard the words, as far as I can remember, from either my mother or my father, that we should envy other people in their lives. Other people had better homes, more money, perceived that they were of more elegance and sophistication, but I never once heard my parents denigrate our family in hopes of being their family. Parents, you give your children one of the great gifts. If you send a message that they count and you count, and they do not have to be another child, even their brother or their sister, they can be themselves. The conclusion is simply this. God gives Peter and John different gifts, different destinies, different ways of behaving and styles of personality. And they're both good. But Peter gives in to the temptation to envy John. And what Jesus is clearly saying to us at the end of the gospel is, you don't have to live that way. You don't have to live on the goodness or benefits of another human being or the hopes that you'll become like them. You can live in whom God has created you to be. And you can live into the future and maturity of becoming more like the kind of person that Jesus is by following Jesus into the future. The gospel is clear. You are loved by God. You are gifted by God. You are unique. Be yourself. And let Jesus make the most of your life as you follow Him. Amen.